Welcome to the Patient Podcast, a series of conversations with innovators, HR leaders, and benefit advisors about how they're solving benefit challenges and building healthier communities by helping people access and afford healthcare.
Hi, I'm Laura Cave, and we are excited today to welcome Cameron Betts of Mercer for a conversation about the health and benefit trends that HR leaders need to know going into 2024. We're all aware of this year's big headlines. Inflation is driving up prices that are squeezing families' wallets. People are deferring or foregoing care in record numbers, and attraction and retention of workers has been a real challenge for employers. I want to ask Cameron to share with us what he thinks is real versus what's just noise. And likewise, you know, we've heard about the push toward benefit strategies that are meant to help employers cope with these challenges. Things like high deductible health plans, health savings accounts, now lifestyle spending accounts. And we'll hear Cameron's point of view on these strategies, which ones he thinks are here to stay and which ones aren't really serving our employee populations. So by way of introduction, Cameron is a senior principal with Mercer, where he consults on health and benefits strategy for US-based and global employers. He's an expert in population health management and all the pieces that go into the benefit programs that keep teams healthy and productive at work, including things like virtual care, family benefits, musculoskeletal, diversity and inclusion, caregiving, chronic disease management, compliance, and so much more. He's joining us today from sunny Southern California. Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much. Pleasure to be here. And it is, in fact, really cloudy today.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You're probably getting a little bit of June gloom early.
We are. It'll be gone by, you know, in a couple hours. So don't feel bad.
Okay. All right. I won't cry for you. So I want to start out by having you share a little bit about your story. How exactly does one become a subject matter expert in health and benefits? And what do you love about it?
There is absolutely nothing linear about or planned. It is falling backwards into a whole bunch of just healthcare innovation. Once upon a time, I'll kind of start at the very beginning. Once upon a time, I thought I wanted to be a hospital executive. And I went to school at University of Kansas School of Medicine for that. It is a business degree from a medical university, which is really bizarre. The business school said, we don't really know much about healthcare. We'll kick it to the hospital. The hospital said, we'll get some health economists and heads of hospitals to join and teach. And so what was really nice about that, not to go too long, was that most of my professors were hospital administrators, or they contracted with providers, or they were providers themselves. Mm-hmm. And it really got me steeped into just understanding, trying to understand the U.S. healthcare system, the delivery, how it works. I don't know that one person can be an expert in that, as it is completely ever evolving. Mm-hmm. But it was great. It was foundational. Once I realized I didn't want to be a hospital CEO, I started working for a major carrier in Kansas City, just doing your standard day-to-day blocking and tackling marketing. But myself and just a handful of others had a wacky idea, this was a long time ago, of what if we really put the focus on prevention? What if we really got people to understand where they were in their lives, in their healthcare? And so we put together the very first carrier-based wellness program. I'm going to use that in air quotes because it was so long ago that it was just blood pressure, height, weight, glucose. We were using a survey that had 26 questions on it that most people lied about. And from there, we started to see what the impact was. We did have some wake-up calls. People were like, I had no idea I had high blood pressure. Or I had no idea that I had glucose that needed attention. And so we started to get people connected with not only their healthcare, but the healthcare system. From there, it was the analytics. What happened? Did anybody get healthier? Where did we impact spend? Where did we impact utilization, emergency rooms, pharmacy, care management, you name it, detection of chronic diseases and cancers. So worked on that, And it was always, what's new? What's innovative? I then got a great offer to move out to Los Angeles. And we've been out here ever since for about 13 years now. And it was working with employers of all shapes and sizes, from a small 150 life group to a, you know, the global brands that are in everyone's pockets or, you know, on their counters, so, or on their feet. So really just was amazing to see the different needs of different populations, the different needs of different HR teams and companies. And lastly, since I've been in this long enough, to watch the evolution of innovation happen that went right from on-site biometric screenings to now apps that directly interact with the individual. My focus has always been around the innovation piece. I've been on the vendor side on product and trying to help individuals understand what the need is and what the ask is. It's not just what the need of the employer is or what can be sold, but what the user wants. And, right. And oftentimes that's the part that gets forgotten, or at least it's the last one that comes to the table.
Yeah.
But that's my focus. And I've been doing it for a long time. And I've seen a lot of things. But the last part of your question, and then I'll stop blathering, was what do I love about it? Yeah. And the thing is, like, cool offerings all day long that are moving from just being condition specific to really taking in the entire thought process of the individual. You know, having watching employers move from we have to focus on our medical and pharmacy costs to let's look at, you know, DE&I efforts. Let's look at SDOH. Let's think about how our people are living and experiencing care and experiencing their lives, and how do we show up as an employer for them? So that's the fun part.
That's awesome. I love your background because you truly have been around every part of the system. I know our founder's background is in hospital administration too, and it's exactly the center of where, like, so often the wheel turns around that care delivery moment, that process, the cost there. And so I think it is a fantastic starting point for understanding how all of everything on top of it comes from that foundation. So that's really cool.
Thank you.
So in the intro, I mentioned, you know, some of the big challenges that employers are facing today. It's all over the trade publications, magazines. We've been talking about it on this show. And I'm wondering, you know, what are the things that HR leaders really need to be worrying about? And is any of it just kind of noise?
Yeah. I don't want to call it noise. But when you look at inflation, when you look at turnover, when you look at the rising cost of healthcare, it's not noise, it's wallpaper. It's ever present. It's always, it's always there. And, as new strategies evolve and as new, just technologies or plan offerings or ways that employers are trying to get in front of their employees, you know, from a turnover standpoint or from a cost efficiency standpoint, it's always going to be there and we're going to make a dent in it. But I can't think of, you know, really a time, and I'm not pessimistic, I just really can't think of a time when an employer is going to be like, nope, turnover is nothing. And actually inflation went down and healthcare is free. So,
well, right. Like, have we ever experienced a year in our lifetime when healthcare costs were not going up?
Exactly. And so it's ever present. Okay. So I think that, yes, it's always going to be focused on, but one of the big things is, like, what's the now piece? Like, what are the companies looking for right now? And I think there's a couple different things. There's a really big push right now for employers to figure out what they want to be from a just a culture standpoint. What they want their brand to represent externally, and what they want their brand to represent internally. So, you know, people no longer just work for a paycheck. They're working for organizations. Yeah, this is a broad statement, but they're working for organizations that they truly believe in.
They're working for a purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's that purpose driven life that is, you know, really coming to the front. Mm-hmm. And I think that HR leaders and the executives and companies themselves are really starting to say, okay, how far do I go with my belief system or my company's belief system in representing it outside and inside? And one of the biggest ways is how they treat their employees and the benefits that they offer within those walls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is that a way to attract people? Is that a way to keep people? Is it a way to keep people happy and get the right ones in there that are going to stay? So I think that's one of the biggest things at the present time that, you know, again, it's maybe not, and we're all done, you know, wipe our hands and we're good. But definitely something that's on top of mind. Benefits fall squarely into that. Not diminishing anything around financial from.
Yeah, that's the reality.
Gotta have that house in order, right? So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you look at, you know, they're still always going to be looking at claims. They're still going to be looking at medical and pharmacy. But I think the ways that it's being looked at on the quality and the outcomes are going to start dictating, you know, what the focus is. And then I think the last piece. So COVID taught us so many lessons, and unforgettable lessons. But one of the biggest things that a lot of employers did was they threw as many point solutions as they possibly could that had a virtual component to them at the wall. And that was not a bad idea. I'd like to go on record as saying that was not a bad idea.
Right.
Because we didn't know what we didn't know. You know, some people, well, not some people, I thought we'd be back to work in 2 months. Fast forward.
Yeah. Yeah. We all did at one point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that there was a rush to provide as many point solutions and offerings as possible. And Now what we're seeing is a lot of companies taking a step back and saying, look, it's not that we don't want to add any. We do, because there's a lot of great stuff out there. We just want to take a look at what we have and see what's working. So that's one of the big tasks for HR leaders right now is to say, you know, time out, what works.
And sure. As or well what's as working together, maybe.
Yes. So you hit on my favorite thing. One of the biggest, in my opinion, one of the biggest false statements that gets made is that somebody will say, I want to be a part of a client's or a group's ecosystem. Or I want to, if I'm an HR person, I want to add something to my ecosystem or who's managing my ecosystem. And the actual phrase ecosystem is wrong. Mm. It's a universe. So It's not an ecosystem. An ecosystem is something that would work together. If you think of a garden, if you think of planting a seed and the water and the sun and plants, and then bugs come and then birds come and then the fruit comes and then everything goes back in to the soil come the wintertime. And it sounds like Mr. Green Jeans, but when it does come back, it's there and it all works together. 99% of all of the items in an employer's universe do not work together. They're there. They're cool. People can access them. They can get after it, but very rarely do you see them working with other things. And, you know, there are some robust and complex TPAs and hub and aggregators out there, but it's not as easy as it sounds when a vendor or when anybody says, oh, we can just share data. You can pass a file, but what are we going to do with it? So that's one of the biggest things and a great point of, do they play well together in that sandbox or do they play at all?
Right. And should they? I hear what you're saying. And I like the metaphor of a universe because you're going to have different centers of gravity around different types of issues serving different people across a diverse population. So if you have people who are struggling to access care, or you want to have an emphasis on primary care, early treatment, preventive, you know, that's one thing. But then you'll have people managing chronic disease or managing musculoskeletal issues, you know, connected to work or not. And depending on, you know, we've got four or five generations in the workplace together, which has never happened before. And they have radically different needs from a health perspective, from a communication perspective. So not everything is going to work all together, because that presumes that there's one consumer who needs all those things. And that's not true. Yeah. Right.
But you make a really great point when it comes to multi-generations in a workforce and the needs of what the population wants. And also the fact that very few organizations have people that stay there for, you know, a lot of people aren't getting that gold retirement watch. Right. Many are, but, you know, the tenure isn't what it used to be at an organization.
That's right.
One of the biggest things that we've been seeing is just, it's a crazy idea, but it's asking people what they want. It is so bizarre.
If you want to know, you could just ask.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of the problem, is that, ooh, maybe you don't want the answer, but, end of the day, when you start asking people what they want, you're going to get different answers. And yeah. We're at a point in technology to where you can start getting specific, meeting the needs of the individuals, and focusing in on what are those unmet needs, really. Yeah. So we do surveys, and we encourage employers to do surveys to their employees, asking them what they want, but more importantly, what they don't want. Like, you know, when you get a survey and you give them 10 questions, rank them, figure out what's not being in that top 10 and being like, ooh, we've really focused on number 8 and no one wants it.
I wonder too. I mean, I'm a marketer by trade, and so surveys are in our wheelhouse. And mm-hmm. one of the things that we talk about a lot is that you can't ask people if they want something that they've never heard of. So when we talk about innovation, you're not going to have an employee be like, you know what I'd really love is something that is a totally new benefit I've never heard of, because it's just not in the horizon of possibility for people. Yeah. And so maybe it's more like the lean startup way of understanding people's problems more deeply before you start talking to them about solutions, just because then it's easier for us to do the thinking of, well, what would be a way that solves that problem? You know, if we could go deeper on understanding the need, I don't know.
No, I completely agree with you. It's interesting. You know, the whole concept of social determinants of health gets thrown around the same way that big data got thrown around, right? 10 years ago, to where people would say it, but it's like, what does that mean? It's like, I don't really
mobile and big data, AI.
It's like, is it mobile? Well, it's mobile enhanced. What does that mean? It's sort of like, is the fish fresh? It's fresh frozen. Timeout. Yes. So when you really start looking at social determinants of health, you know, the buzz around it is, oh, and we can find out someone's zip code, and we can find out food deserts. Like, those are really kind of the big two that are thrown around. And great, you know, you got to start somewhere.
Yep.
But when you really start thinking about it, and if you have a low paid workforce and you think, wow, this person is just over the 30 hours, and there's, you know, multiple dependents, and there's, you know, is this a single family? Yep. Does this person have multiple jobs? Do they have access to transportation issues? Do they have, you know, housing insecurity from a standpoint of, can they make rent?
Right. Credit issues.
What does that second job look like? And then you give them a cancer diagnosis, and it's like, okay, Now let's figure out how we're going to help them and really look at what social determinants of health are. So it is interesting. And I call it out just because it gets thrown around, in my opinion, far too often. And it's like, okay, well, what's your answer to it? And again, got to start somewhere. But oftentimes it's, well, we can target them with messaging.
Oh, no. Fantastic. I'm the one that has to help. My team has to write the messaging. So.
Exactly. I don't mean to sound so pessimistic or down on the industry because it's an industry that I absolutely love. But
messaging alone doesn't create change. It has to be structural in the product,
it goes back
in
to
the
your
solution
point
of, itself. Yeah. So, okay. So I want to shift us into, you know, we talked about the challenges today are kind of like wallpaper. Maybe they're like a little exacerbated, but they've always been there. So I'm curious if you can, what you can tell us about like how HR leaders should be, like, what are the strategies that smart HR leaders are pursuing that are helping them navigate this and cope with what's going on right now?
Yeah. That population analytics is so important. Knowing what you're going for, knowing what you're trying to hit there, looking at your organization from not just a diverse makeup, but really looking at, you know, if you have 30% of your population that is wanting to see age 65 and retire and be done with it. Like, what are we going to do there? You have, you know, how to transfer that knowledge internally from the senior people down. We're in a, for most of our clients and companies, we're in a remote area where it used to be you would just sit down next to the new person and walk them through step by step what they need to be doing. We don't do that. So I think that it's not just career planning. It's not just meeting the needs of a variety of individuals. It's not, taking care of the new hire that just, you know, either did or didn't graduate college, because quite frankly, that's even up for debate on how important it is. And I'm sure the University of Kansas School of Medicine would hate me saying that, but, you know, it's just things have evolved. And so I think that's one of the biggest strategies is to really dig into the population.
Right.
And there are those, you know, the health plans that have always been there that are a bit bread and butter, because, you know, sometimes you need an HMO, sometimes you need to have a PPO, sometimes you need a high deductible. But as we evolve, there's more areas of specificity to meet the needs of those individuals when it comes to the health plans. I'm not going to pick on the health plans at the moment. I'm going to save that for a second, but I think that there's the opportunity there. So population understanding, second, just, I don't see this as a flash in the pan. I don't see it as the next, you know, shiny object, but I love lifestyle spending accounts. I think those are great. I think that when you look at what has worked and what hasn't worked, when you look at the evolution, it used to be a $50 gift card for a biometric screening was all you needed to do to incentivize somebody for an entire year. That doesn't hold anymore. One of the things that, again, COVID taught us was work from home is kind of expensive to the individual. And so when you can start having these specific types of financial wins for individual by saying, hey, get your desk set up, get, obviously I don't have a ring light, otherwise I'd look 20 times better, but, you know, get these types of things, for working from home, and we're going to specify it. And by the way, we are going to have a wellness stipend for you, but if you don't want to work out in a gym, totally fine. We're not going to give you a gym membership.
Yeah.
If you want to go buy shoes, if you want to do something else,
subscribe,
like, that's great.
App. Yeah.
So it's putting, it's recognizing individuals want different things, and it's putting the opportunity of choice in their hands. So that's another big thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things that, you know, I guess our experiences with patient and the flexibility to spend on whatever is out of pocket across medical, dental, pharmacy, vision, even veterinary care, so you can take care of the health needs of your whole family, including the fur babies. Mm-hmm. That flexibility is huge. People are like, what about if it's in network or not in network? Or does it have to be a qualified expense? We're like, we don't even know. We don't even know what you're buying. We just know if it's an improved provider. Like if they accept a visa and their MCC code is that they're a medical provider, your card will work. Up to you. You know, and so that flexibility has been really cool because what it means is that the people who can't access care, they need that liquidity in order to like make the ends meet, but they need to go to the urgent care or whatever, they can do it. And it turns that surprise thing into a manageable expense. But then likewise, when you've got a mom managing the healthcare of like her partner and three kids and a dog, she puts it all in the cart and it's organized in one place. And so we've been hearing like really different use cases about how people are using the card because everybody just needs a little liquidity sometimes. And then you hear, you know, people saying like, oh, I'm using it to organize my healthcare expenses. And I'm thinking as a marketer, like, wow, I never told you to use it like that. But that's how they find value in it, you know? And so that's just been like a really fun order of discovery. But I think the takeaway was that people love the flexibility of it and the freedom after a lot of benefits that have been kind of limiting in past years, you know?
Absolutely. And I will clearly check my privilege at the door and recognize, you know, where I am and that, you know, I did actually get hit with an unexpected bill recently. And I was nothing like opening the mail and being like,
oh, what?
How was this? It's like, oh, this is the one I have to pay. And then questioning, was this run through insurance? And the answer was, yeah, oh, it was. And you still owe that.
We're in the industry. Like we actually know how this works. The same thing happened to me. And I was like, this is a month of rent, you know?
Exactly. And so there was that. And then we have a new dog that is sleeping off to my left and she needed to go to the vet. And I think our vet is buying a summer home, because that wasn't cheap. And, you know, like all of these different things. And, you know, when not everybody, to your point, not everybody can go, oh, wow. Well, okay. This is just going to be a tough month.
No. Exactly. And it's not really about debt necessarily, but it's about flexibility. And actually, when you give people flexibility, they have the ability to manage these things. They just need a little bit of time. Yeah. And so that's kind of what we're focused on. You know, it's about being able to know confidently because it's embedded in the benefits level that I have something in my wallet and I can always pay. And then I will figure out later how to pay that off out of an HSA, out of an FSA. Which one of those accounts do I need to pull this from? Or I just need to pay this off over the next six paychecks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had people, there was a woman whose story we told in a recent video who found a spot on her scalp and went to a dermatologist and they said, oh, that's cancer. You need to have that removed. And it was going to be $450. And she's like, I paid it off over a few months. And having the ability to do that, imagine if she had not.
Yeah.
You know, what would the expense be then to her, to her employer? I mean, these are the kinds of things that we can unlock. And again, it's just giving people flexibility to manage their expenses. And it turns out they can handle a lot more if they just have a little time, you know, to take care of it.
I mean, I think you make a great point. And to me, it just speaks of trying to understand what an individual is going through that's not in, you know, your direct line of sight. And, you know, for just to bring it back into an HR world, like there's so, if you have an employer that has 3,000 employees, that's 3,000 different needs.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And so I think one of the things that you brought up was the concept of, for me at least, brought it up, this isn't financial mismanagement. This isn't somebody's done something wrong. It's just, oh my God, those are big bills.
Yes. And healthcare spending is almost always unexpected and unplanned.
Yeah.
And so like whose finances are immune from that kind of bill that you just talked about?
Exactly. You know, one of the surveys that we always do takes a look at just an individual that could absorb a $5,000 unplanned expense. And the percent of individuals that can absorb an unplanned $5,000 expense is very low.
Very,
and it's not because the majority of those people don't save, don't manage money properly, anything like that. It's just, that's a really big bill that they just got saddled.
That's right. That's right. And everybody's running lean, especially with everything that's been going on in inflation and all of that. So, all right. So Cameron, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, you know, we have had a ton of experience now coping with all of these sort of wallpaper issues, rising costs, inflation, turnover, things like that. I'm curious, what are some of the strategies and maybe solutions that haven't quite turned out the way that we originally thought that they would?
Yeah, that's a good one. The first one that comes to mind is high deductible health plans and consumerism. And I think from there, it's evolved. The intent of them was so good. It was to get people more accountable in their healthcare, get them to focus on cost, get them to focus on quality, all good things. And then, you know, get them more responsible for their portion, because this was, you know, if you think back, this was back in the day when all people knew was that healthcare cost whatever the deductible was, or whatever their share of the premium was. You know, the latter is probably more true.
Yeah, or their copay.
Exactly. Healthcare costs more than $5.
Copay is not $25 for a doctor visit.
And you can't just go to any imaging center, not to beat up on imaging centers. But and then it was going to help out employers, because that was going to make it a really attractive plan. And the idea was that people that didn't use healthcare were going to head into there, and then you throw on the HSA, and it's a beautiful savings device. But what ended up happening was, and still happens, and the plans are out there, and they continue to be offered. I will say the amount of standalone HSA plans for an employer we have seen decline. They've gone back to offering some form of a PPO or an HMO. But the intent was all good. What ended up happening was, and I include myself in this, was you would go to the primary care. Everything would be covered, but then they'd run one test, or there would be one thing that happened. And I'll use myself as my own story. It was high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And it was, well, you need to go get, you know, A, B, and C different tests. So went and got those. And they said, well, nothing was conclusive. And I used a transparency device tool to find out where the lowest place to get those tests were.
Yeah.
And then inconclusive. So it was go to a different place. So I had to use transparency device again, kept those costs low. Didn't want to, you know, I knew that those dollars were mine. And fast forward this story, you know, there was care management that was offered. There was transparency tools. There was my deductible. There's all of that. There was making sure of in-network, and I did everything exactly the way I was supposed to do it from a consumerism standpoint. And I never hit the deductible. I was actually $175 away from hitting that deductible. Oh. And nothing was wrong. It was a stress-related situation. And then guess what happened? The calendar year turned and it became January, and I had to start all over again. Oh, and that really got me thinking, okay, I've just spent $3,000, to find out that nothing really was wrong. And that's great, because it could have been $3,000 to find out that something was wrong, but it turned out not to be. But I used all of the tools to figure out how to get the cheapest, and most, quality oriented thing for me. And my employer didn't do anything, which was, I mean, they of course paid the other, the 80-20 mm-hmm. Percent of the premium. But end of the day, it just made me rethink high deductible health plans. For those that never use the healthcare system, for those that don't have issues like that, it's great. Doesn't cost very much. You want to contribute to an HSA, knock yourself out. If your employer does, great. But for those who buy it because it costs the least on a plan, a high deductible health plan can really come across as mean when you really get into the weeds of it. It was never intended that way. And the evolution of it has focused more on the cost and quality. You know, it used to be, well, if the person, you know, the person's a bad consumer, they need to be more educated. And it really put almost the blame on the individual, where it's like, time out, you know, that's not what the intent was. But now you have networks within provider groups of, this is a low cost, high quality network. Those are great. I am a big fan of those. Mm-hmm. I think that that is fantastic. You have vendors coming out from, you know, new entrants that say, we are a centers of excellence when it comes to anything from musculoskeletal to cancer to, you know, obesity. Like, great. I am all for the lower the cost and the higher the quality, that match. But just, and I know I went long on it, but I would say that the high deductible, I think, changed from its original intent. And again, it's still being offered and it's still a great plan.
Yeah.
It just, I don't think that it really lived up to what its initial concept was.
Well, and the rest of the industry wasn't ready. I remember the first time we were put on a high deductible plan for the company that I worked for. This was like way back in 2011, maybe. And I had a terrible case of bronchitis or something, and I needed antibiotics. And I went to my doctor's office, my primary care doctor, and I had this new insurance, and they were like, that'll be $100. And I was like, whoa. And then they were like, also you have to pay us in cash. And I was like, what? I don't have cash. I was living in New York City. I didn't walk around with tons of cash in my wallet. And so then, being sick as I was, I had to go downstairs and find an ATM and get $100 and come back and give it to them for my appointment. And then I could go to the pharmacy and get my medicine. And it was just mean.
And let's not forget that you had bronchitis. That just reminds me, it's when thinking about when a high deductible plan was first introduced, at the company I was working for, which is not the one that I work for now. And it was, oh my gosh, this is going to emphasize prevention. So people are going to, and it, again, it put that sort of onus and weight on the individual. Well, they need to eat better. They need to exercise. They need to get sleep. And mind you, we weren't even talking about stress back in those days. It was just exercise and watch your diet and go in network. But it's so interesting because when you do have those things that pop up, the answer was, oh, well, they have an HSA. It's like that $750 in an HSA isn't going to cover it.
But that said, if you had a form of payment that you could use, like a patient card or a well-stocked HSA, if you had price transparency, which we're making strides in, if the providers were prepared to like accept a credit card, which most of them are now, you know, the ecosystem around all of this is improving. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm overly optimistic, but it sounds like maybe there's a future where HDHPs aren't as painful as they are now when all of these things catch up, but without them, that's tough. That's really tough to manage for people. So it's a really great point.
I'm optimistic with you. And I think it's the evolution and it's the new entrants into the marketplace that are going to change it.
That's great. Well, Cameron, this has been awesome and we could talk all day. I want to ask you one more question, which is, you've obviously been super successful throughout your career. And I'm wondering if there's a leadership lesson or something that has really carried you through that you could leave for our listeners as a takeaway.
Absolutely. I had a boss who basically said, I need you to get in the game. I could talk a lot. I had ideas. But when it came to getting in front of clients, when it came to just expressing myself, when it came to, and I know, like, I'm surprised too, but,
express yourself.
evolution, everything's an evolution. But I just got, you know, we were talking and he's like, you need to trust yourself and you need to get in the game. We need you. And, so it was one of those things to where I just kind of put it in the back of my head. It's like, get on the field. You can't ride the bench. Get on the field.
Yep.
So that's number one. Number two, are you familiar with the Antarctic explorer, Ernest Shackleton?
I know the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a book that was written called Endurance, and it is a phenomenal read, and I recommend it to anybody. Not only is it just a cool adventure book, but it's probably the best business book I've ever read.
Awesome.
And it's all about Shackleton's adventures in trying to cross Antarctic, because pretty much from when they set sail, everything went wrong. He had assembled a great team, individuals, all had unique skills and talents, and they worked and he played up to every single one of those skills. There were decisions that needed to be made that you were like, ooh, that seems a little, you know, questionable. But end of the day, you're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So one of the, I just can't recommend that book, or at least that story, because it's one of those, when you think it can't get any worse, just turn the page, because it does.
Oh my gosh.
But it has an amazing ending. And there's lots of different business lessons to be pulled out of that.
I love it. That's going on my list for sure. Well, thank you, Cameron. This has been really, really fun. Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Laura Cave, and this has been The Patient Podcast. If you'd like to share feedback or contact us directly about this episode or any other, drop us a note at podcast@patient.com. That's podcast@patient.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.